Welcome to the Diecast, everybody. I'm Seamus. With me this week is Rutskarn.
What up, guys?
And Christopher.
Hello.
And Josh.
Is Christopher okay? He sounds very sad.
I just have a thing in my throat. I'm good.
Oh, okay. You sure?
He just has a thing in his throat. Tragedy.
And Mumbles.
Why does Josh, like, always have to, like, try and say something funny? Every time we do this podcast, it's more than a sentence every time. Every time, Josh.
No one has ever complained about it before.
I just did. I'm filing a complaint right now.
Josh, we resent your attempt to bring humor into our lives.
How dare
you? Into our show that we record.
This is a serious podcast about video games.
Oh, speaking of video games, our first topic this week, cute boys.
Yay! Cute boys, which you guys wouldn't know anything about.
I like cute boys sometimes.
I get all the boys.
All right. We're going to talk about cute boys, but I just want to lay some ground rules. My concern about is we already spend way too much time on this show talking about me, and I don't want this to make it worse.
Yeah. Ooh.
So even though it's about cute boys, I'm off the table. All right? I appreciate your cooperation. Thank you.
Okay.
Now
I know that you guys...
Like, us as characters in some sort of weird dating sim.
Don't ruin this for me.
Except it would just be...
Oh, God.
I'm
not touching it. I'm waiting for Mumbles to finish.
No, please stop. Please. I knew... See, the thing is that I really want to talk about this game, but I knew in the back of my head, there's like this voice that was like, Josh is going to ruin it for you. Josh is going to make jokes that's going to ruin this game for you.
I don't think that was a voice in your head. That was probably either me or Rutskarn.
Josh is going to ruin this game for you, Mumbles. Yeah. Okay, so it's made by this company called Cherries, and it's this Korean company that makes games specifically for women, and they're pretty much all dating sims, and there's a couple of their games on Steam that one of them is you walk into your apartment and there's a bunch of cute animals, but joke's on you, they turn into cute boys. So you have to pick which one you like the best.
Whoa, so it's like an inverted harem comedy. Or you only get to pick one.
Well, I think you can only pick one. But it's fine, because usually everyone like has their own type. So you just pick whoever is your type.
How did it take this long for somebody to make Husbando Atsume?
Right? I don't know, but it's like the greatest thing fucking ever. Okay. So the game that I've been playing is called Mystic Messenger, and it's a phone app game. And okay, this is how I'm going to sell it to you. It has the best chat feature I've ever seen in a video game ever. It has email, it has chat room, and it really, when someone's typing a message, it really feels like that character is taking a little while to type a message out. There is even a part where this girl was like trying to explain her feelings, and it took her a minute to write it all out, and the dude left before she finished. And she was like, oh, I was trying to write this out. And then you just be like, LOLOL. And it's really cool that way, because it really feels like you're actually in a chat room with these like cute boys. And so there's two modes. There's casual mode and then deep story mode. And I'm an idiot, so I thought that you... Okay, let me talk about the boys you can date. There's cute model guy who's super insecure and bad with girls. There's businessman who's very serious and loves his kitty cat very, very much. There is gamer boy who is innocent and small and he plays WoW all day, every day. And then there's everyone's favorite 707 hacker man. He hacks into stuff, and then he hacks into your heart. He is the greatest. And
is that his catchphrase?
That is the catchphrase that I made up for him. You can't romance hacker boy or man who loves cats in the casual mode, and I did not know this. So I spent $30 trying to get hourglasses so I could speed up each day, because the chats are spaced out during the day. So you'll just be like standing in line for something, and you'll look down and you'll be like, oh, I have a new chat. And then you just sit and chat with these little cute boys. So anyway, so I bought hourglasses so I could get through the day faster, because I didn't have anything better to do with my time. And I thought that I could romance 707 in, or just 7, I guess, whatever. He's got lots of names. I thought I could romance him in the casual mode, so I tried 3 times, and I couldn't do it. And I was like, I was freaking out. I was like, how am I this bad at romance? I'm usually great. I have a husband. I should be good at this. And it turned out that you just can't. You have to buy deep story mode, which I did. And I'll have you know that it only took me 1 run through of deep story mode to romance 7. And for most girls, it's very difficult. So I guess you could say it's the Dark Souls of dating simulators.
Okay, I'm back in now. I'm into it. All right. All right. Okay, let's do this.
Yeah, no, it's really great. It's actually, all jokes aside, sorry, internet, I made that Dark Souls joke. I didn't mean it. But it's actually good. I just feel like anytime you make a joke about Dark Souls, even if you really don't mean it, you're gonna get, like, video essays from Campster, you're gonna get, like, 10 fucking blog posts Dark about Souls it on 20-sided.
Dark Souls analogies is the Dark Souls of analogies.
Thank you. Exactly. I'm glad someone understands. but no, for serious, it's like such a fun game. And the only weird thing that weirded me out about it is they can call you. And that's weird, because you can put the phone to your ear and listen to these boys in Korean talk to you. It's translated on the screen, but it's still weird. Like, to me, that's too far. Like, it's a dating, you know what I mean? Like, it's a dating simulator, haha, we're having fun, dating cartoon boys, this is great. But then they talk to you on the phone, you're like, whoa. All right, this is a little, this is breaking.
Yeah.
This is making me feel a little uncomfortable.
That would probably be much weirder if they went to the trouble of, like, bringing in English voice actors for it.
Which they...
Like, oh,
this game
okay.
is fucking taking off with the ladies.
But still, shit like that can send you to Divorce City.
Yeah, right? So, like, if you... Yeah, I can imagine, like, fucking... Luckily, I mean, it takes a while for any of the guys, except for model guy who's desperate, to say anything nice to you. Like, the thing... Okay, spoilers. For anyone who hasn't played this game, spoilers. The thing about Seven's route is that he's a hacker man, and he does dangerous work for the government. And if he gets feelings for you, you're also in danger. So he doesn't want to talk to you anymore. He just, you know what? As soon as this is over, he's out of here. And, like, so he's mean to you through a lot of it. And so you have to be like, I know that you're just scared, but, well, you know, I'm still here. I still want to date you. You're cute. And then eventually he'll be like, just kidding, I have feelings for you. But so that means you get a lot of, like, messages and fucking phone calls that are like, don't ever talk to me.
Oh, man.
I don't like you.
Exactly what, that's basically exactly what's happening in my Dungeons & Dragons game.
What, really?
Are you fucking serious?
Yeah, no, seriously. Yeah, no, I run a game on Saturdays, and, like, one of the characters, she picked up a hireling. And, like, they kind of had a fling because her character is, like, really kind of shy and had never really been in a relationship. But her hireling is sort of like, you're now, like, level 20 and you're going off on these missions. And, like, you're in serious trouble with all these world powers. And I'm, like, perpetually level 1. This is a bad idea.
Nice.
So
it's like the opposite, though.
It's kind of the inverse.
Is that how it was worded? Kind of, because that's really
not awesome. Very romantic. It's not very romantic. They got to figure out a way to make it more romance. Like, oh, you're so powerful and strong. I'll never be as powerful as you. How am I ever going to compete? That's how you have to say it. You got to give them some romance lessons via Mumbles.
I don't know why you like me. Your charisma stat is so much higher than mine.
Right.
Well, no, this is the stat where everybody rolled.
Like Rutskarn.
This is the game where everybody rolled 3d6 straight down on stats, so no, charisma's not very high.
Now I'm imagining Rutskarn as a DM, like listening to this like romance subplot play out between this character.
Yeah,
and
does it ever get awkward?
And Rutskarn's just like, no, you have
really.
To do it right. And like,
I only
slams a red phone onto the table and calls it, and Mumbles is on the other line.
That's right.
The instructions.
That's right.
No, this is, honestly, I only do this stuff with parties who are okay with it. And if I like do escalate like a in-character relationship, like I always check like after scenes, like, okay, so like, was that. Is that weird at all? No? Okay. And at this point, I'm pretty comfortable with my current group, so no, it's not weird.
That's interesting. I never really thought of D&D that way. Like, I always thought it was just like, we're gonna go take on this temple. Not like, we're gonna go find a nice lady in this temple and give her the business.
It's much more fun if you bring that stuff in. Because suddenly, it's like worth caring about.
Yeah.
Okay, so fun fact, me and my lady, when we didn't know each other that well, we got into a game together that we were in a year and a half later once we started dating. And way before we started dating, our characters in the game started dating.
Oh my god, that's so cute!
Yes.
Oh my god, that is adorable.
And here's the kind of the silly thing about it a little bit. Both of our characters were male, and her character is like a gay guy. And I was originally playing, like, a straight guy, but, like, I don't know, a couple weeks in, I suddenly decided the character was bisexual for no particular reason.
Okay. Oh, my God.
Like, there was no point where I was like, oh, man, I want to like, get with this character. It's just, like, I gradually started, like, thinking of the character as bisexual. Like, maybe that would be interesting.
Oh, my God. That's so cute. That is a lovely story.
Yes. And the DM was also bisexual, attracted to both of us, so...
Oh, that makes sense.
That was a weird year.
Wait, in reality or like
yes, in reality.
PC?
Oh,
yes.
Oh my goodness. That's wow. Okay, I feel like we got somewhere today.
All right, good session, everyone.
Okay,
good progress.
Anyway, boys.
Yeah, that's it. I was just going to say, if you really want to see an interesting chat feature in a video game, like, just, if you don't give a shit about cute boys, that's fine. Just pick up the game to see it, because it's so good. And it's
okay,
one of
what's
those
the name
times
of it?
Where, like, it's called Mystic Messenger. And it's
Mystic Messenger.
One of those things where, like, the gameplay and the story work perfectly together. Like, oh... This makes sense. The gameplay is really well done. The story is awesome. They're put together. I'm feeling good about this. This is a great game. So that's what I suggest to check it out. Also for cute boys.
All right. Next up, Rutskarn. You are now messing around with Twine Games. Tell us about...
Okay, yes. I took Chris's advice, actually. I followed the links you gave me.
Hooray, I'm helpful.
You were helpful, yes.
He didn't say that yet. You can't jump to that conclusion.
So, last time on the diecast, I was bitching about the fact that Inklewriter didn't provide enough tools, despite the fact that Inklewriter was not designed to provide me the kind of tools I wanted, and that this was a grave and serious offense. And Chris suggested I use Twine, and I'm like, well, doesn't that require work and knowledge on my part instead of just leeching off the hard work of others and creating their tools? But anyway, I've been trying it, and it's been tricky, but I've been learning how to program in the least possible useful way. Like, for the least, like, applicable, imaginable function?
I mean, there are definitely ways you could learn programming that is even more esoteric and useless in the real world.
Than, like, how to do expressions in Sugar Cube to make it yes. so that, like, okay, so here's what I've done so far. It's a thrilling game. You guys ready for this?
All right. Okay. Let me hear it.
Here's the game. So you have a paintbrush. And you have three pots of paint. One that's red, one that's yellow, and one that's blue.
Is this for wait. Is this for painting dongers? Is this a donger painting game? Because I'm way into that. That sounds awesome.
Way better.
That's how you make money.
Hang on a second.
That's money. Money right there.
Okay, yes, it's a donger painting game.
Yes!
So you've got a paintbrush, a pot of red paint, a pot of yellow paint, a pot of blue paint, and a donger.
Yes.
You can dip the paintbrush into each of the paint pots. If you dip your paintbrush into the red paint, your paintbrush is red. If you dip it into the red and the blue paints, your paintbrush is purple. If you dip it into the red, blue, yellow, your paintbrush is black. Then you can paint the donger, and it will be painted the color that was on the brush. You could also wash the brush in the water, and it will clear the brush of all colors.
Wait, okay, so you said you have a donger before you start painting. Is that like you're painting from reference? You got like a reference donger there sitting on your desk or something?
You just basically, you've got a little easel, and you're using it to prop up your scrotum.
Okay.
Nice. All right.
I'm visualizing this in my head. I'm trying to get into this donger painting simulator.
Well, it is theater of the mind, Josh.
Yes.
These text adventures.
What's the time of day?
It can be day or night, actually, because you could take a nap and then it'll be nighttime.
Oh. Okay. Nighttime donger painting. That's a classic. That's a classic
exactly.
hobby.
Exactly. Burning that midnight oil. Enjoy. Painting those midnight scrota.
It's not too near to the donger. Keep the midnight oil, you know, over.
You know, I was worried about the previous segment was going to go into questionable territory. I didn't think your text adventure would take us there.
I'm glad that I can help.
Well, I mean, once you have... Basically, once you become drunk with power with a text adventure game maker, all you could do is just make smut, just 24/7. Just like you're really hard-pressed to make a game that you would share with anybody else.
Obviously.
See, I get intimidated.
You come back to your apartment, and inside are like a bunch of sexy man rabbits.
You get intimidated by smut,
eating ice cream.
Is that what you want to say?
No.
No, I want
to
hear what Chris has to say.
No, I was just going to say, like, I often pop open Unity and just screw with it and see what kind of, like, basic platformer or systems I can make. Sometimes Game Maker, if I'm feeling more lazy than Unity. I get intimidated by Twine because it is all about the written word, and it is just, it's that blank page phobia of, like, I could do anything with this, and it horrifies me. Like, that vast... emptiness is horrifying to me, whereas like for some reason Unity, I'm like, I don't know, let's make a platformer, let's see if I can make a guy jump. And to me, that's way easier than prototyping in Twine, because Twine is like scary.
I think by far the thing that I am the proudest of in my entire life is that I've got myself to the point where I can get over that. Like, getting to the point where I can like look into that void and just start like hitting keys and making stuff, and then just fixing the stuff later. Oh god, we're going to be talking about Star Citizen later. There's some uncomfortable synergy here.
Do you know how he did that, Campster?
How he did what?
Well, I don't know how he did it, but I know how I did it. So I look at that blank page and I think, how can I work dongers into this?
Yeah, that's correct. That is the way
it just like it zooms in on Josh's forehead and just like dissolves in a picture of like an MC Escher pattern of dongs, you know, just like filling all available space.
You guys are joking, but I do wonder how many authors get their start in like slash fic and things like that and get, you know, just get their feet wet writing doing that and then moving on to, you know, actual writing. Well, not actual writing, but you know what I mean. Something a little less lewd and pulpy.
Lots of them.
After the fact.
Yeah, lots of them.
I mean, yeah, whatever it takes to get you to sit down and start writing, like, big chunks of stuff, that's the way to get into doing writing. Because ultimately, yeah, it doesn't matter if what you write is good. It matters that you've written stuff and that you're getting better because you're writing stuff.
See, I've been writing, like, nonfiction for so long, I just figure, like, I'd start writing fiction and end up into some Andy Rooney territory of like complaining about a thing just because I'd start criticizing it immediately. Like, you know, Jim went to play basketball, and you know what? Basketball kind of sucks. And you know why? It's because the last 5 minutes are the only things that matter. And I'm sitting there for 3 hours, and goddamn, like, I could just picture myself doing that, which is why I should never be allowed to write twine.
That's the Neal Stephenson school of writing. It's like, try and write a story, and every 5 minutes you just go off on some digression on some aspect of society.
So
and that's
something
crucial to survival, but like, dicking around on the margins of stuff that most people don't care about.
That is,
you guys,
like,
want to hear a fun fact?
Yes.
That I just thought of. Okay.
What's that?
So when back in the old timey times, you didn't have printing presses. So instead, when you wanted to have a new Bible, monks would write them. But monks would get bored writing these fucking Bibles, so they'd write shit in the margins. And then the next guy who wrote the Bible thought, oh, this is clearly part of the Bible. So then the shit that the monks wrote in margins got put into the Bible, and so now it's part of the Bible. And then you have historians who go back and then have to take that shit out because they find an old copy of a monk who wrote it in the fucking margins. Okay. Just think about that.
Why did you bring that up? My controversy sense is tingling.
Well, there's that passage about dongers that was really out of
you
context,
said something about
honestly.
Margins, and it totally just fired something in my brain. Right. I'm sorry. That's one of my favorite things.
Hopefully that does not cause controversy.
Guys, I'm changing over to a new fucking schedule. I have been trying to sleep nights, so if I say stupid, shitty things, just fucking take it out. I don't give a shit.
Okay. Let's move on to our next topic. Which major historical religious characters are actually OCs put in by fanfiction writers after the fact?
You're making it worse!
Zarathustra.
I think that's a good answer, because I don't understand it. Anyway.
Greek.
No, he actually, Benjamin so the Franklin whole digression
but
thing.
Nobody can agree on when he existed, if he was like 1700 BC or like 300 BC, which is a really big fucking, this is Zoroastrianism, the prophet that was responsible.
I haven't understood a word you've said in the last religion. 60 seconds. Just
it's an Iranian
FYI.
Religion. It was the religion of the last Persian Empire and probably the preceding two. Basically doesn't exist. Freddie Mercury was a Zoroastrianism, or was a Zoroastrian.
Oh.
I didn't realize he was that old. I thought it was like 40 or something.
No, it still exists, he was like 2000. Limited. It still exists in limited communities.
Oh, I see where you're going with this.
All okay, right. Well, thankfully, all of them listen to the diecast, so good job, Josh.
God
so,
damn it.
So, Rutskarn, what do you have beyond painting planned for Twine?
Okay, so I'm going to keep making Dead Adventurers. I've already started one. And currently my ambition is still... I will say I now feel like my ambition extends beyond my ability, but not necessarily beyond my tools. So I'm going to keep working on a game that, like, is a little harder and requires some more complicated, like, timekeeping and stuff. And I'm going to... In the meantime, I'm going to work on an adventure that uses only the stuff I currently have. And I've been watching the extra credits, like, dungeon design segment on Durlog's Tower, which is really great. So, actually, I guess I finished watching it since it's now completed. And that's kind of inspiring me, so I might try it, like, a dungeon thing.
That could be cool.
It's been slow going a little bit, not because I haven't had ideas and not because, like, I've been having trouble writing them, but because, like, I'll need to figure out how to do. I'll run into something else that I want to know how to do to make it work. And so I'll run off and I'll read a tutorial, but then I won't want to mess up like the thing I'm already working on. So I'll create like a test room and I'll start learning it. It's like I've been spending more time learning how to use Twine than making games with Twine, which is, I guess, okay for now. But that needs to change soon. I had a point about like the writing digressions thing. It's like that is a good way to start filling space. That's kind of how I got through parts of my NaNoWriMo thing. Where it's like, you know, I've got to write another 1,000 words in the next 30 minutes. Like, what the fuck am I going to write about? So, like, you just try to get mad about something. And, like, one day I came in and I had just, literally, like, 30 minutes before, I had gone to a 7-Eleven and ordered a taquito, and it pissed me off so much that I had the character order a taquito from a 7-Eleven just so I could dig into it again.
Wow. My was go-to... It... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to ask a stupid question. Was it the quality of the 7-Eleven taquito, or was it the fact that you were at 7-Eleven ordering a taquito...
It was
part of that experience.
7-Eleven, I mean, I have nothing, like, 7-Eleven's sacred. But the taquito tasted like, okay, here's the thing. A taquito should never, under any circumstances, have the texture and appearance of a Hot Pocket. That's all I gotta say.
Oh, no.
So this was aged.
No.
This was aged,
sure,
like fine wine.
I don't know. No, it was not a burrito. It was a fucking taquito. I know, because I would not have ordered a burrito. I've ordered a taquito.
My go-to muse when I need to, like, fill a bunch of space is just Mass Effect 3. Oh, shit, I need to fill 100,000 words.
Yeah, well, we've all experienced that firsthand from you, Seamus.
You sit down to write the great American novel. The Mass Effect franchise has disappointed gamers worldwide.
Yeah, most people don't realize this, that this is, that my Mass Effect review originally started out as a novel about a Dust Bowl farmer's going through a troublesome divorce. And he was an alcoholic, and she'd been unfaithful multiple times, but they needed to stick together because they couldn't survive apart. And, not a lot of that made it through the editing process.
I was confused about that draft I saw about, like... the Pinkertons and the shotgun battle, like your website.
Yeah,
the DLC for this game's off the chain.
No, but yeah, I'm a big believer. I really, the thing about digression writing, I love digression writing, but Neal Stephenson's digression writing, but he's always writing about shit that I'm into. It's sort of a make or break moment if you're writing for a particular audience. Either they're really into this topic. Or they, you know, they will be once you start writing about it, or they do not give a shit and they will tune right out. So it's kind of a little bit risky, but it's a great way for the people who like it, they will like it even more. It's an intensifier. If they're not caring, they'll care even less. If they love it, they'll love it even more. That's how I should put it.
It's also like, you know, so Neal Stephenson's approach, and yeah, I enjoyed Cryptonomicon enough to reread it several times, but his approach in, like, going on these digressions is that, like, he has, like, an odd opinion about something, and he's a smart guy, but so he can see a few things and he can, like, form kind of an interesting opinion about them until it's something that you care about or something that you know more about than he does. Or something that, like, you maybe don't
that was
want
never
Neal
a problem
Stephenson
for me.
Forming an impression of from a great distance. And it's like, at that point, like, it's a question of how much do you really want to know Neal Stephenson, what Neal Stephenson thinks about this?
All right. I feel like we have sucked all the marrow out of that topic.
Oh, I thought you were going with a different reference there.
Yeah, no, I wasn't.
You know, with dongers and whatever.
Yeah.
God damn it, Josh!
Well, that's the thing. Once you start doing your writing, people have a tendency. It's often the task is so big that people often choke. Because it's so hard.
Yeah, exactly.
people need something to grasp onto. People need something to just. So anyway, moving on.
I want no part of this.
Are you kidding?
Just
that's
abandon that mid-sentence.
Terrible, lazy innuendo is like your job. I swear,
yeah,
it's on. It's on your job description as part of this show. Is like shitty, lazy innuendo mixed with puns.
That's what I'm talking about. You guys are scabs.
All right. Well. Okay. Over the weekend, I saw my first footage of Star Citizen. I haven't seen anything. I've just been hearing about how it's a train wreck. Everybody's working in crunch mode. The money's been all spent, and then they spent more of the money, and it just keeps going crazy, and everybody's being irresponsible, and it's going to be a disaster. It's going to be Daikatana and Duke Nukem Forever mixed together. And I saw my first footage of it, and it didn't look terrible. In fact, parts of it looked really, from a technology sense, looked really impressive.
What was the worst-looking part of it? I'm just curious, like, how low does the bar get set?
Okay, I'll start with the good stuff. The good stuff is they've got basically an entire seamless world where you can be in a space station, you walk out to your spaceship, get on your spaceship, fly through space, go down to a planet, land on the planet, go through the airlock, and into a different space station, and wander around inside without ever seeing any pop-in. There's no obvious, like, even in No Man's Sky, when you go down to the planet, there's a layer of clouds to kind of obscure when it swaps out the marble you're heading for with the actual landscape below you. There's nothing like that here. You are landing on a planet, and it's all totally seamless, no loading screens, and it all takes place in the same world. It's not like it's broken up into zones. So if you're in a space station, and you look out the window, and your friend is flying around outside in his spaceship, you can look out the window, and in the window of the spaceship, and see him in the cockpit of the spaceship, and he can wave at you, and you'll see him wave. That's actually super friggin' hard. Like, I don't know if anybody's ever done that before.
Yeah, they were actually taking pot shots at No Man's Sky when No Man's Sky was still, I guess, relevant to the conversation last month.
Yeah.
And which was a very surreal sort of like pot calling the kettle black moment of like, yeah, your game has totally come out.
Yeah, exactly. I think you guys need to ship before you can start
like,
throwing shade
at
No Man's Sky.
Exists. I can go and play it if I want. There are certain modules of Star Citizen that you can play that are currently not in a state that, as I understand it, are all that good. Can of worms.
I can't stand how it's like 5 years into development, and occasionally like there's just a GIF like, check out this helmet model that opens cool, like check out these eye blinks. It's like, I kind of feel like this is the equivalent of if Deus Ex had been under development for 5 years, like the first one, and then I saw a GIF like, check it out, NPCs notice when you use the women's restroom. It's like,
exactly. Maybe
there's a really great game attached to that, but if that's, I feel like you're just showing me the sexiest parts.
And that's what made me worry that this game was all just weird features that didn't fit together, because they're showing off, like, here's a high-res helmet model, and I'm like, do you have an assembled game? Anybody can make a 3D model. But no, I've seen it, and to answer Chris's question, the worst part that I saw in this, now this was a fairly, it wasn't on rails demo. It wasn't just scripted just to run this demo, but they had a plan. They knew exactly what quest they were doing and everything. And the worst part of it was the combat. Like, there's one part, like, three quarters of the way through where you finally get in a gunfight with some space pirates. And, I mean, like, there's space
like,
combat.
I've skimmed through here. Is this the one where they're, like, floating around in zero-G?
Yes.
And it's like, well...
Yeah.
That's a thing.
Yeah, it looks awful because they're not really animated much, and you're like, well, it's, you know, they're in zero G. How much would they be animated? But they look like there's also corpses floating around. So it just looks like some of the corpses have guns and shoot at you. And there's like the kinesthetics in the game look terrible. You can't tell when you're being hit. You can't tell when you're hitting the enemy. No, again, the game is not shipped yet, so this is not totally indicative of the final product, but just to answer Chris's question, that's the part that looks really concerning, is the gunplay right now looks really rudimentary.
Yeah, I'm watching that part right now, and they're doing the thing where one guy's on the bow of the ship looking out at his friend trying to break into another ship who's just in his little floaty spacesuit, and it looks like any FPS character that you set into no clip mode and just have them fly around the map, that's exactly what this looks like. So yeah, it does look really pretty. I don't know. I just don't know if there's any real demand for a game like this other than the people who have already paid for it. You know, like,
well, they have $123 million, so a lot of people have paid for this.
Well, no, but
at this point.
I mean, beyond that,
or
like,
rather,
what
a subset of people have paid a lot of money for this, I should say, because of the, you know, $10,000 ship packs. Bullshit.
What are they going to do once the game is out? Because they've spent most of the money they got from, as far as I can't say they spent most of the money. They spent a fairly large portion of the money they've already got from all those $10,000 spaceships. What happens when the game comes out? How do they fund the next one of these? Are they going to do another pre-order Kickstarter? Like, as a business plan, I don't see how this works.
It's supposed to be like an MMO. They're not going to make another one. They're going to maintain the one that they have, is, I believe, the plan.
And
do they have a business model for the players? Like, is it subscription-based?
There's it'll be like there'll be microtransactions, so it'll be like a free-to-play MMO, basically. I don't think there'll be a subscription service. They haven't talked about a subscription service, to my knowledge.
The MMO thing is what worries me the most, more than the combat, which can be fixed. I wonder if they've really thought about what that means to have a massively multiplayer MMO, because we've already seen how that turns out.
Nope.
We had Ultima Online. And when you give everybody swords and say, do whatever you want, it turns out what happens is they just murder each other. Like in the demo, they show, oh, look out the window, and there's your friend Bob. He's flying his spaceship, and that looks cool. But that's going to look less cool when there's 30 players all ramming face first, humping the space station with their ships. And doing barrel rolls outside the window and bunny hopping around. And this sense of majesty and grandeur is just completely wiped out by just people dicking around and behaving like asses. It's going to be goofy.
As I understand it, they're taking a book or a page out of the Eve book as far as, like, I don't know if it'll be like open PvP everywhere, but I believe that's a component of it, and it's supposed to, like, from what I've heard, work similarly to the Eve world, with like territorial control and lots of open space so you can, like, you know, fly out to, spread out to, and that sort of stuff. But the reason why I say they didn't think about the MMO open world is not because they didn't design for it, but because they're clearly not picking the technology that they need for it. This is a CryEngine 3 game, you know, that famously not open world space game engine. The engine that was designed for Crysis, the shooter. So the game is able to look really nice through a combination of that and high-quality assets. But they've had trouble, like, since day one of using this engine with doing, like, object permanence and stuff like that that you need for an MMO, because the CryEngine was not designed for that kind of stuff. And, like, all this kind of networking stuff that they need for the massively multiplayer online features that just doesn't exist in CryEngine, and it's probably like CryEngine is not designed to do on like a fundamental hardware level. You know, you want stuff like hard server based you know, databases and stuff that you know, you don't want anything on the client, which I'm not sure the CryEngine was ever really designed to do. I mean, you don't do that with shooters that much. You know, stuff like that has been a problem with the game for years. There's also, like, I believe they actually outsourced the first-person shooter segments to a different, like, a subcontracted company. And what they got back was really, really bad. Like, awful. So for a while, they just kind of stopped talking about the shooter stuff. I think this gameplay demo is, like, the first time they've mentioned or showed first-person, like, ground-based combat in a while, and it still doesn't look any good.
Oh. But for me, it looks so much better than what I was expecting. It's much in much better shape. I mean, they went through an entire chain, a quest chain there, and it all seemed to work. Nothing seriously broke. Looks super annoying that you can't get in your spaceship because you can't hop. That was super stupid, and I can't believe that's still an issue, but, you know, that's easily fixed. But it looks... I don't know how soon they're planning on, you know, releasing, but if they say, oh yeah, the game is still a year off, I'd say, this game's on track. I can imagine this thing would be in really good shape in a year, given how much we've seen. And how much seems to be working.
So, again, having not watched most of this footage, does it look like it could just be a scripted demo? Like, not actually taking place in an open-world MMO environment, but just, like...
Well, I mean, it was multiplayer. There were two...
constructed this. Yeah, sure, but even that can be scripted demo stuff.
They were actually playing the game. I mean, they even went out of their way to show that they weren't scripting, and they kind of, like, broke away from the quest and screwed around for a bit. So... scripted, okay. I mean, I'm not sure what you mean by scripted demo in the sense of, well,
I mean,
they're obviously,
like,
doing
they
this.
They specifically made this chain of mission segments to show this off, and it's not stuff that's actually in a game that works somewhere. This is a demo.
Well, it showed features.
I mean, that's how
that
demos
worked.
Work.
I mean, yeah, I mean,
right.
I mean, it's still... You still the HUD work. The HUD gives you picture in picture of, like, the person you're talking to far away, and you can see the guy in the other ship, and he's animated, and there's a bunch of stuff that just apparently works. And, you know, they've solved what to me seem like the big technology problems, and the problems that are left are things like game feel, filling it in with content, filling it in with quests. You know, stuff like that.
I look forward to the response to this being an echo of No Man's Sky, just different. Instead of No Man's Sky having very little to do in very, very pretty, varied environments, you're going to have all this, like, on-foot combat, in-spaceship combat, missions that are procedurally generated on the same gray, rocky terrain over and over again, and that's how people are going to get bored. So I look forward to that happening.
Yeah.
I suppose I should clarify that despite how hard I am on Star Citizen in general, I'd like it to be a good game. You know, in the same sort of way that I'd love for all politicians in the world to be honest and actually do what they're supposed to do, I just don't believe it'll happen at this point.
My concerns with Star Citizen are primarily around the idea that this really is a genre that has not had a big AAA take like this in a very, very long time. And again, I wonder what the demand is for something like this. It might be way huger than anyone ever thought. Again, their funding is terrific. Or maybe pretty much all the diehard PC fans that remember this genre back from, you know, Free Space and Freelancer and all the other sorts of this game, they're the ones who are backing it, and there isn't anyone else. And I'd be curious to see how that ends up.
The No Man's Sky disaster might have helped them. There'll be a lot of people that suddenly want to get their space sim on and are feeling very unsatisfied after No Man's Sky. So maybe that helped them. All right. Well, we could speculate for another hour, but let's move on. No PS4 mods for Fallout 4. Who wanted to talk about
this?
We're
not going to tie this into the other one.
Oh, I skipped one. Yeah, these actually should go together. Sony, this is a story I ran into this week on Twitter. Sony just came right out and said, we're worried about the PC and we're designing our console to, like, try and not give people a reason to migrate to the PC to do their gaming. And I thought this was remarkable because for the past 10 years or so, the conventional wisdom has just been... And the sales numbers back this up. Aside from PC-focused genres, you know, when you get into your big-budget games like your Last of Us and stuff like that, your shooters, your big-budget story-driven games, your Bethesda titles, it's always like the PC market is just a tiny slice. Like, the main sales figures are all on Xbox. They're all on PlayStation. And then, you know, those two have most of the audience. They fight over most of the audience. And then PC players are somewhere in distant third place, if somebody even bothered to port the game for them.
I don't know if that's really the case anymore. 5 years ago, definitely. Today?
Yeah, and it seems like that's changing, and since everybody plays their sales numbers so close to the vest, and nobody wants to give any... I mean, Steam gives their numbers away, mostly, sort of. They're more open than the other ones, but that's only for the PC. So, the only way we know change is happening is when they come right out and say it. And this is an indicator to me that something is changing, and the PC is suddenly gaining ground, apparently. And that makes sense to me because the PC is kind of leveled off. You don't have to stay on the upgrade treadmill of throw your computer away every 2 years and buy another $1,000 computer if you want to keep up with games. You can game today. You can play the latest titles on a 5-year-old computer, no problem. You know, and a 3-year-old graphics card. And, you know, you won't be playing it on high settings, but it'll work. You'll have a good time. It won't be terrible. So maybe that's giving the PC a lot of advantage.
So let's back up and add some context here. This was an interview with, this stuff came up with an interview with Andrew House, who I believe runs the PlayStation division at Sony, during the press conference from a few days ago where they unveiled the PS4 Neo, which is now called the PS4 Pro, you know, for professionals.
I'm holding out for the PlayStation Executive Edition.
I was watching the Giant Bomb stream of it, and they were suggesting, well, they should rename the other PS4 to the PS4 Noob now. what is it with console code names being so much better than the release names? Like, remember when the Nintendo Wii was called the Nintendo Revolution, and that name totally would have just worked for the console with what it was? Yep.
I don't know, the GameCube was going to be called the Dolphin, and I'm not sure that's a huge improvement.
Okay, sure. I would have been perfectly fine with PlayStation Neo. In this interview, the exact quote that you're referring to is... quoting from the article here, regarding the PlayStation 4 Pro, he suggested the Xbox wasn't even being considered its main competition, rather it was the PC. Direct quote, I saw some data that really influenced me. It suggested that there's a dip in mid-console life cycle where the players who want the very best graphical experience will start to migrate to the PC, because that's obviously where it's to be had. We wanted to keep those people within our ecosystem by giving them the very best and very highest performance quality, in brackets. So the net result of those thoughts was PlayStation 4 Pro and, by and large, a graphical approach to game improvement. This is referring to some of the features that the PS4
Pro
supports,
like,
like 4K.
I'm not sure I believe it either.
Displays. Well, it's interesting. I mean, for one, it's not really true. Like, the PS4 Pro specs that we have doesn't, like, it's stronger, more powerful than the PS4 vanilla, certainly, but it's not, like, it's not even up
it's
to,
not an
like,
alien.
The higher
yeah.
mid-end cards that we have. Now, that doesn't always
mean
that
the console's going
to look
worse. It's not an Alienware PC or anything. Right, with a couple of Titans in it.
I mean,
Alienware is not a fantastic PC manufacturer, but sure.
If I had to guess, without, and this is pure speculation, conspiracy theory crap, so it's probably wrong. I would assume that we have long theorized that the PlayStation Pro was being developed to basically accommodate for VR and the additional processing load that was required to render at higher resolutions for two eyes and also handle all the motion tracking logic while also keeping games running at 60 FPS, because not all games on the PS4 as it stands run at 60 FPS. But also, there have been those recent stories where VR sales have kind of flatlined. VR support has not taken off like people thought it was going to. And I'm wondering if they're kind of hedging their bets away from being like, we are throwing ourselves waist deep into VR, this thing that isn't selling. And instead they're being like, well, we want it to be really, it's really to compete with the PC, and it's going to make games really pretty, and we're going to compete graphically.
I doubt they, even if VR sales had been huge, I doubt they would have come out directly and said, like, this is the PS4 you want for VR. Because what they want is to attach a $400 price tag to an already an additional $400 price tag to an already $400 headset by saying, like, you have to have you really want the PS4 Pro for VR, and then your $400 VR headset turns into an $800 VR headset and console. They have explicitly stated that, you know, VR will work with the original PS4. They did say in the conference that it would look better with the PS4 Pro, which even that's like kind of one of those, like, are you sure you really want to say this?
I'm getting FPS vibes. I really firmly believe that they're having trouble getting up to 60 and that nausea will be a problem.
Sure. I mean, like, they've both consoles this generation have struggled just to do 1080p 60 FPS.
And that's the bare minimum for VR.
I mean, Bloodborne is locked to 30 FPS. You know, and that's the best looking game on the PS4 right now. It's not a pretty picture. And yeah, I'd be surprised if they weren't, you know, generally gearing this thing towards VR performance, but.
Well, the alternative is that I think Sony has kind of lost their minds and are going for a scattershot approach to the future because they have no idea what's next. They've announced Project Scorpio.
I mean, so is Xbox. So is Microsoft with the Xbox or the Project Scorpio, whatever they're going to call it.
Yeah. So everyone's kind of doing these staged, really, I don't know.
The other thing with the Scorpio is it sounds like it's going to be a hell of a lot more powerful than the PS4 Pro from what we've been, you know, hearing, and probably have a much more premium price tag. Like, the speculation I've heard is like actual PC level, like gaming PC level hardware in it, which would be nuts for a console right now. But then, you know, it would probably cost like $700 or something like that, so.
The other thing I don't like about them saying, you know, oh, we want to compete in the middle of the console generation. The thing that makes me uncomfortable is, well, okay, your graphics don't look as good, and that's a bit of a disadvantage, but it's also an advantage. Everybody's good at using the tools. Everybody's gotten off the upgrade treadmill. And I mean the developers. Nobody's riding an upgrade treadmill. Nobody's learning to use new tools. Nobody has to push the hardware. We know that making a new game is taking the previous game we made and adding new art assets with only minimal new programming. That's an incredible advantage.
I don't know if that's actually really true for AAA development right now. I think people are still pushing, like, you know, new engine improvements, new
graphical improvements,
new shaders, but, new whatnot.
Sure, but they're small. They can make small incremental changes. Hey, we'll add new shader to do this new effect. And if it doesn't work out, no big deal. The game isn't going to be terrible. You're not being forced to, like, get the most power out of the machine and... Yeah, what you don't want is to just make everybody that just got used to the PlayStation 4 development environment and make all of them have to go through that transition again for the PlayStation Pro. And that would just suck.
Yeah, I think they're shortchanging the back end of a console's life cycle by doing this, because now everyone's getting used to new hardware again. And that really is when the consoles tend to shine. Like, if you go back and look at, you know, PS2 launch titles versus the end-of-life PS2 titles, or if you look at, you know, PS3 launch titles that looked, you know, kind of plasticky and just basically PS2 in 1080p, whereas end-of-life PS3 titles looked, you know, absolutely amazing. I mean, we had Grand Theft Auto 5 running on PS3 and Xbox 360, which, if you think about it, is just incredible. So, I mean...
Yes. So in a lot of ways, knowing the hardware is more valuable than having better hardware. To a certain extent, it's better to have all your developers being really experienced and familiar and at home, and they've got the engine just the way they want it, and everybody knows their jobs, is more important than squeezing a few more FPS, a few more, you know, shader effects out of it. If you're going to take a step, it had better be a really big one to justify the disruption. And my worry is...
Cell 2!
Well, it's worse than that, though, right?
Super perfect cell processor.
They're not dropping support for the old PlayStation 4, so now what you're talking about is every PlayStation 4 game has to be targeted to two hardware specs, effectively.
Yeah. That's the other thing.
Yeah,
and I wonder if they're gonna do like a I wonder if in like a year or two they're gonna back off from that as they like watch the numbers of like the adoption numbers of like PS4 versus PS4 Pro, and like at some certain ratio they're gonna say like, okay, yeah, you can make PS4 Pro only games now because nobody buys the original PS4,
and people don't want developers aren't gonna want to develop for that many... Okay, well, we've got to do our PC release, and our Xbox release, and our PS4 release, and our PS4 Pro release. They don't want to do that.
Aren't the PS4 and like Xbox One just basically PCs at this point?
Well, yes, but their development environments are very different. They've got different tools. You can't just copy and paste your code base from one platform and have it compile on another. There's a lot of work that goes into making it. And you can use, you know, Unity to ease that transition, but the big studios aren't, you know, using Unity. If you see what I mean.
Your indie middleware, yeah.
Right.
But as I understand, like, I was under the impression that it's a lot easier in this generation to port games.
It's gotten easier, but it's still not trivial. General. And just introducing another step, that's another platform that you kind of need to QA for. They're different, they're hardware different, so it's like, okay, the game hits our desired frame rate on the PS4, but we got to make sure the PS4 Pro version also hits its frame rate target and doesn't have graphical glitches. So you're you're doing that much more QA testing, that much more certification, and that shit gets expensive and time consuming and just sucks the joy out of everything. So yeah, I don't want to say it's a terrible idea, it's a worrying idea is I guess where I'm going with it.
Anyway, the funny irony of all this is that the day after this interview, Bethesda released a very short press release which I will read in its entirety. PS4 mod update. After months of discussion with Sony, we regret to say that while we have long been ready to offer mod support on PlayStation 4, Sony has informed us they will not approve user mods the way they should work, where users can do anything they want for either Fallout 4 or Skyrim Special Edition. Like you, we are disappointed by Sony's decision, given the considerable time and effort we have put into this project, and the amount of time our fans have waited for mod support to arrive. We consider this an important initiative, and we hope to find other ways user mods can be available for our PlayStation audience. However, until Sony will allow us to offer proper mod support for PS4, that content for Fallout 4 and Skyrim on PlayStation 4 will not be available. We will provide an update if and when the situation changes.
Wow. See, if you're worried about the PC...
So, you know, the day after Andrew House says, you know, the PC is our main competitor, basically, or we're trying to compete with people running off to the PC for graphical performance, Bethesda says, yeah, well, they're... I guess PC users are going to have mods, so that's fun.
Yeah, really. I mean, I think mods are a way bigger selling point than graphics, but that's just me. And I've kind of always been in the... But I'll bet the numbers bear me out. I mean, you know, games look pretty, but having all of those mod options is just amazing. And it's just... It's funny that they seem to be going for broke on the graphics, which has a huge downside that we all just belabored, and then no. They're cutting out mods. And I assume the mod thing is content worries, because you can't filter for adult content, or it's very hard, or you can...
From what I've heard, I mean, Steam Workshop doesn't have a huge problem with that. From what I've heard, the real issue was that they were, like, Sony was unwilling to provide the kind of space necessary to do it. Like we're talking like hundreds of megabytes versus Xbox, like Microsoft's like several gigabytes worth of space available for mods.
And other issues
with that. And Sony's always been like ever since they took out the option with the PS3 to turn it into a Linux machine. They've been really protective of their platform over the past like 6 or 7 years. The PS.
Yeah, they've got the hardware problem of like, well, what if this game just keeps getting bigger because you download more mods.
The PSP and PS Vita have had like tons of problems with people managing to like crack some of the security features on the operating system and just basically like straight up pirate PSP and Vita games.
Yeah.
In ways that like that I'm sure Sony is like, well, fuck. In fact, I think something like that, like there was a big security hole in the firmware of Vitas that was discovered fairly recently that will allow just like straight up pirating.
That would be really stupid if they're worried about piracy. Which, that's a terrible reason. That'll sell
consoles.
Well, I mean,
like, just sort of that general, like, we don't want people potentially messing around with our platform. I don't think that's a huge concern, but maybe that played into...
I could understand if they've got some sort of technological problem where the operating system is in charge of a game and it says, oh, this game is 60 gigabytes. Okay, I will give this game 60 gigabytes. And there was just no allowance in the system for a game to just get twice as big while it's running.
Or it was like some sort of cloud network kind of stuff problem.
Yeah.
It's also possible.
So this is all rumor mill stuff. No, but they have not issued any official word on why this happened. But I had been linked to a Reddit comment by somebody who was really active in the modding community. And the things he said were the primary things holding it up were that one, Sony really does limit you to 900 megabytes for mods per, I believe, per game. And so you really couldn't have a sufficient amount of space for really extensive modding. And so Bethesda didn't want to support that. If, you know, you can only download one 900 meg mod, that's not a lot in 2016. And the other things were that apparently the PS4 uses certain proprietary audio and texture formats, and Sony was unwilling to provide Bethesda with the ability to build the things that would encode them to the public. So, like, there's no way to create a mod and then have it get encoded for
fucking file specifications.
I imagine that stuff's so proprietary, and someone in legal probably said, we're not going to give them this. And then Sony said, said they can't do it then. I mean.
Yep. And that's the kind of bullshit I was talking about when I talk about porting between platforms. That kind of stupid proprietary bullshit. I didn't even know about that one. I know there's all kinds of weird, like, everybody has their own, like, shader language and stuff like that, and you can't just use, oh, I wrote an engine in OpenGL. Well, the console doesn't speak OpenGL. You need to build some sort of intermediate thing to translate it and say, oh, well, good thing that's free and that's not going to create, you know, any overhead. So, yeah, this is terrible. That's a terrible reason to not have modding. All right. I sense that we have talked enough.
I'm thinking a way to, like, tie this back into Dongers, and I'm not really coming up with anything.
Okay, that's definitely the end of the show, then. If you're trying to take us back to Dongers, I need to get them away from me as quick as possible.
I'm surprised we managed to get away from Dongers.
This has been the Dongcast, everybody.